Chapter 9. Dangerous Characters. Luca. It is hard to describe a certain type which is as rare in prison as elsewhere. They may be recognized by the terror they inspire, and are instinctively avoided. My first reaction was to shun their company, but later on I took a different view, even of the most loathsome murderers. Some men have never gone so far as to kill, but are more repulsive than others, who have taken half a dozen lives, for there are crimes so strange as to baffle the imagination. One sometimes comes across a man who has led a perfectly decent life under the most trying circumstances, a serf, maybe, a domestic, a shopkeeper, or a soldier. At last his patience is exhausted, his resistance vanishes, and he plunges a knife into his enemy. He does not stop there. The first murder is understandable. He was provoked beyond endurance, but now he kills for pleasure and at sight. He deals out death in return for a harsh word, for a look, perhaps simply to make an equal number of victims, or merely because someone stands in his way. He behaves like a drunken man, like one in delirium. Having once crossed the borderline, he is himself astonished to find that he holds nothing sacred. He violates every law, defies the highest authority, and indulges his bloodlust without restraint. He enjoys the turmoil of his own soul and the terror he inspires, knowing all the while that fearful punishment awaits him. His emotions are probably like those of a man who, looking down from a high tower into the abyss yawning at his feet, feels the urge to throw himself headlong and put an end to his life. That may happen to the meekest and most commonplace of men. There are some who even take pride in their ungovernable passion. The quieter and more self-effacing they have been, the more they swagger and seek to inspire fear. These desperate characters revel in the horror which they cause. They gloat over the disgust which they excite. They take part in the most outrageous acts from sheer despair, and either care nothing for their inevitable fate, or seem impatient to meet their end as soon as possible. The most curious thing is that their excitement, their exultation, will last until they stand in the pillory. Then the thread is broken. That moment is decisive, and the man becomes suddenly calm, or rather lifeless, a thing devoid of feeling. In the pillory, all his strength fails him, and he begs pardon of the people. Once in prison, he is quite different. No one would ever imagine that this lily-livered, chicken-hearted creature has killed 5 or 6 men. There are, however, some whom prison life does not so easily subdue. They preserve a degree of swagger, a spirit of bravado. "I say I'm not what you take me for. I've sent 6 fellows out of the world," you will hear them boast. But sooner or later they must all submit. From time to time a murderer will amuse himself by recalling his audacity, his lawlessness, when he was in a state of despair. He likes at such moments to have some silly fellow before whom he can brag, and to whom he will relate his heroic deeds as if there were nothing extraordinary. "That's the sort of man I am," he says. And with what cultivated yet reserved conceit he watches his companion when he tells his tale. It can be observed in his accent, in his every word. Where did he learn this artfulness? During the long evening on one of the first days of my confinement, I was listening to one of these conversations. Owing to my inexperience, I took the criminal who spun his narrative for a man of iron character, with whom Petrov was not to be compared. He was a man named Luka Kuzmich, who had knocked down an officer for no other reason than that it pleased him to do so. This Luka Kuzmich was the smallest and thinnest man in our barrack. He came from the south and had been a serf, one of those not attached to the soil, but who served their masters as domestics. There was something cold and aloof in his demeanour. He was quite a little bird, but with beak and talons. Convicts sum up a man instinctively, and they had no very high opinion of Luca, who was too easily offended and too conceited. On the evening in question, he was seated on his camp bedstead, stitching a shirt. Close by him was a narrow-minded, stupid, but good-natured and obliging fellow, a sort of colossus named Koblin. Luca often quarrelled with him in a neighbourly way, and treated him with a haughtiness which, thanks to his good nature, Koblin did not notice in the least. He was knitting a stocking, and listening to Luca with an indifferent air. Luca spoke in a loud voice, and very distinctly. He wished everyone to hear him, though he was apparently speaking only to Koblin. "I was deported," said Luca, sticking his needle in the shirt, "as a brigand."
"How long ago?" asked Koblin.
"When the peas are ripe, it will be just a year. Well, we reached KV, and I was imprisoned. Around me there were a dozen men from Little Russia, well-built, solid, robust fellows, like oxen, and how quiet. The food was bad, and the governor did what he liked. The days went by, and I soon realized that all these fellows were cowards. "You're afraid of an idiot like so-and-so?" I would ask them. "Go and talk to him yourself." And they burst out laughing like the brutes they were. I held my tongue. "There was one fellow, so droll,' added the narrator, now leaving Koblin to address all who chose to listen. "The droll fellow was telling them how he had been tried, what he had said, and how he had wept hot tears. There was a dog of a clerk there," he said, "who did nothing but write and take down every word I said. I told him to go to hell, and he actually wrote that down. He troubled me so that I quite lost my head. Give me some thread, Vasily. The prison's thread's bad, rotten."
"Here's some from the tailor's shop," replied Vasily, handing it to him. "Well, but what about this governor?" said Koblin, who had been quite forgotten.
Luca was only waiting for that. He did not go on at once with his story, as though Koblin were not worth notice. He threaded his needle quietly, tucked his legs lazily underneath him, and then continued as follows. "I excited the fellows to such an extent that they all complained of the governor. That same morning I had borrowed the rascal, prison slang for knife, from my neighbour, and hidden it so as to be ready for anything. When the governor arrived, he was mad with rage. 'Come now, you little Russians,' I whispered to them. 'This is not the time for fear.' But, Lord, all their courage had slipped down to the soles of their feet. They trembled. The governor entered the room. He was quite drunk. 'What's all this about? How dare you? I am your Tsar, your God,' he yelled. When he said that he was the Tsar and God, I went up to him with the knife in my sleeve. 'No, Excellency,' I said, drawing nearer and near to him. 'That cannot be. Your Excellency cannot be Tsar and God.' 'Ah, you're the fellow, then,' cried the governor. 'You're the ringleader.' 'No,' I replied, and came still closer. 'No, Your Excellency. As everyone knows, and as you yourself know, there is only one Almighty God, and he's in heaven. And there's only one Tsar, set over us all by God himself. He's our monarch, Your Excellency. And, Your Excellency, you are as yet only the governor of this prison, and you're our chief only by the grace of the Tsar, and because of your own merits.'
'How?'
stammered the governor, speechless with amazement. My answer was to throw myself at him and thrust my knife into his belly up to the hilt. It was soon over. The governor tottered, turned, and fell. I had thrown my life away.
'Now, you fellows,' I cried, 'it's for you to pick him up.'
Here I must interrupt my narrative. Expressions like 'I am the Tsar,' 'I am God,' were unfortunately too often in the good old times heard on the lips of senior officials. Their usage is far less frequent today, and 'I am God' is probably quite obsolete. Moreover, I should point out that those who used such expressions were chiefly men who had risen from the ranks. Promotion seems to have disordered their brains. After having laboured long years beneath the knapsack,
they suddenly found themselves with rank and authority. Their newfound dignity and the first flush of excitement aroused by their advancement gave them an exaggerated idea of their power and importance in relation to their subordinates. Such men are abjectly servile in the presence of their superiors. They will even go so far as to assure the latter that they have been common soldiers and have not forgotten their place. But towards an inferior, they are merciless despots. Nothing irritates a convict so much as abuse of this kind. This overweening confidence in their own importance, this exaggerated idea of their immunity from natural obligations, rouses hatred in the hearts of the most submissive men, and drives the most patient to excess. Fortunately, such conduct belongs to an almost forgotten past, and even then the superior authorities dealt very severely with abuse of power. I know from several examples. What exasperates convicts above all is the manifestation of contempt or repugnance in the behaviour of their officers. Those who think it is only necessary to feed and clothe a prisoner, and to treat him strictly according to law, are much mistaken. Howsoever debased, a man instinctively demands respect for his humanity as such. Every prisoner is well aware that he has been condemned as a reprobate, and knows the distance which separates him from his superiors. But neither branding iron nor chains will make him forget that he is a man. He must therefore be humanely treated. Humane treatment may raise up one in whom the divine image has long been obscured. The unfortunate, above all men, needs a light hand. It is his salvation, his only joy. I have met with some officials kind and indeed noble characters, and I have seen what a beneficent influence they exercised over the poor, humiliated men entrusted to their care. A few affable words have a splendid moral effect upon the prisoners, making them happy as children and sincerely grateful for their masters. On the other hand, convicts have no time for undue familiarity on an officer's part. They wish to respect him, and familiarity destroys respect. A convict will feel proud, for instance, if the prison governor has a number of decorations, if he has good manners, if he enjoys the esteem of some higher authority, if he tempers justice with mercy, and if he is conscious of his own dignity. Better by far a man who recognizes his worth without insulting others.
"You got well skinned for that, I suppose," said Corbulin.
"As for being skinned, indeed, there's no denying it. Ali, pass me the scissors. But what next? Aren't we playing cards tonight?"
"We drank the cards up long ago," remarked Vasily. "If we hadn't sold them to buy drink, they'd be here now.
If. Ifs fetch 100 rubles apiece on the Moscow market."
"Well, Luka, what did you get for sticking him?" asked Corbulin.
"It earned me 500 strokes, my friend. It did indeed. They almost killed me," said Luka, once more addressing the assembly and without heeding his neighbour Corbulin. "When they gave me those 500 strokes, I was treated with great ceremony. I had never been flogged before. What a mass of people came to see me. The whole town turned out to see the brigand, the murderer, take his punishment. I can't tell you how stupid the populace is. Timoshka the executioner stripped me and laid me down crying.
Now then, I'm going to grill you."
I waited for the first stroke. I wanted to cry out, but couldn't. It was no use opening my mouth. My voice had gone. At the second stroke, you needn't believe me unless you please. I never heard them count two. When I regained consciousness, I heard 17. 4 times they untied me to let me breathe for 30 minutes and to souse me with cold water. I stared at them with eyes starting from my head and told myself I shall die here.
"But you didn't die," remarked Corbulin innocently.
Luka looked at him contemptuously, and everyone burst out laughing. "What an idiot! Is he wrong in the upper story?" said Luka, as if he regretted that he had condescended to speak to such a fool.
"He is a little mad," said Vasily. Although Luka had killed 6 men,
No one in prison was ever afraid of him, although he liked to be regarded as a dangerous character.